to rebuild their cities, open schools, repair and staff hospitals, get the basics working again, food enough to eat. For the refugees we saw on the Croatian-Slovenian border, a safe place to lay their heads, not having to move on, an opportunity to start again, to receive a place of welcome, of hospitality. But the water in the Negev was a surprise. It was captured by an Israeli cameraman, and normally the riverbed is dry, sandy, the broken boulder fields and empty waterfalls. Yet suddenly the water came pouring through. And there are plenty of dry places on Earth, and that's not just a feature of global warming, not least as some places have had very wet years indeed, with terrible floods. The dry places, I mean, are those situations that never seem to change. They always remain the same, stuck in the same rut, the same difficulties, where it's hard to flourish, hard to see things grow and improve. Harsh places where kindness, mercy, generosity seem to be missing, if not all of the time, at least some of the time. Grinding places where it is hard to make a living, to make ends meet. A question of survival rather than living. Or folk trapped in the circumstances they find themselves and not sure and unable to see how positive change may come. And why I like this video clip is suddenly all that changes. And for a few minutes, I'd like to reflect on when God makes a way where there is no way, where hope is more important than remembrance. And we'll do this by looking at this passage from Isaiah. And for them, it was dark and difficult times, and they had given up hope. Isaiah is writing to a people in exile who were powerless, unable to change much of their situation, but also were not blameless for the pickle they were in. They'd forgotten the basics as far as God was concerned, but God had not forgotten about them. Nevertheless, they were locked into a set of expectations as to how things should and could change. And those expectations were a real barrier for them to be able to see and grasp the way forward that God was planning for them. And there is both a comfort and a danger in looking back to the past as a pointer to what the future could be. The glory days, the way we did things before, the way deliverance happened in the past, will help us make sense of the present and the way we can shape the future that will be. Now, it is a value to know the past, but not to live in it. So for the reading we had, God had assured the people that he still had a plan and purpose, even though they had messed up. But what was coming was not what they were expecting. And sometimes we think we know what God is likely to do because in similar circumstances, he worked in a particular way, and we expect God to work that way again. This can limit and deceive us because we find it hard to discern and understand what God is actually doing because it isn't what we expected. And in the previous verses, Isaiah reminded them that when they were oppressed and enslaved before in Egypt, God made a way through water. It was impassable, and he made it passable by removing the water for them to walk on dry land and escape in the wilderness. So they thought, to get out of jail, that's what happens. God makes a way, he removes the water, you walk over on dry land. And he did that to make a way through for them to escape into the wilderness. And the wilderness was a testing place, a place of formation and shaping to become the people of God, to prepare them for the realities of the promised land and to build a just, faithful, and obedient people where God would be their God and they would be his people. And they would be a light to the nations, both as a witness and as a worshiping community, as to what God was like and what it meant to follow him. But this time, God's people would be taken out of the scorn and disgrace, the disaster, the failure, the defeat of their lives in exile, and they would be redeemed and restored. But this time, God would make a way through the desert, through the wilderness, where there was no water. Except this time round, God would put the water back in. Not just flash floods or oasis or water from the rock, and the arguments there had been over food and water that had marked and disfigured the Hebrews' passage through a different set of deserts. But in this case, God would provide streams, flowing water, that would allow the people returning from exile from Babylon to flourish in the wilderness. The way back to being restored and redeemed was by willingness to trust God on the road into the dry, difficult, marginal places, the hard places, and relying that precisely in those unpromising lands would be the promise of life. Now, there are various ways that this passage can be read, but I would suggest that one way of reading this is through an eschatological lens, looking to times that were being spoken of that went beyond the immediate return to Babylon, not least because, as far as we know, when the Jews did go back, it was staggered over many years, it was piecemeal, and on occasions they had military escorts. As far as we know, although God provided for them in that way, there were no miraculous streams that appeared in the desert when they dribbled back to Jerusalem. But the picture of water is not just about a God who creates clouds, rains, rivers, and streams in the physical of life, but the spiritual too. And the promises of the Spirit that gives life, that brings new life and commitment, fruit and blessing, it points to the Messiah and to the age of the Spirit, where Jesus calls out on the last day of the feast to come and drink from the living water he himself supplies. That alongside this, those who are on the margins, in the language of this poem, the doleful creatures of the night, also get caught up in the blessings of God in the wilderness, the wild places of the earth that are being transformed. Move on, Jim, please. So it's hope rather than remembrance. And it's a message to the margins, to the dry places of the earth. Now, ostriches had a very bad reputation, certainly in the Bible. They were seen as cruel mothers. And it's highlighted in Job, who's actually a bit of a naturalist. And he writes that the ostrich leaves her eggs on the ground for the soil to warm. Then she is unaware that a foot may crush them or a wild animal break them. She acts if the eggs were not hers and is unconcerned and her efforts wasted. It's very critical of the ostrich. And in fact, the eggs may well not have been hers. The male had several partners, other people's children, and they were all deposited in the same nest. There is a major hen, and he shacks up loosely with her, and the others are one-night stands. They all leave the eggs in the nest together and have no further role in rearing the young. And the major hen makes sure her eggs are in the middle of the nest, leaving the eggs on the rim that belonged to the other ostriches, and that makes them open to vultures. In the Bible, they represent desolation, ruins, destruction, depopulation, loss of hope that no one will ever again live there. Yet now that changes. They were in their normal environment and blessed by God, despite the fact that they were unclean. The Hebrew word for ostrich means greediness. And since 1966, they have become extinct, which is why you've got a skeleton on the screen. Jackal, in Hebrew, means howler. The golden jackal is more often an opportunist, a Jack the Lad or Jack the Jackal. Often they hunted in pairs, and they were not solitary. They sometimes moved with extended family groups of up to eight, and dozens of jackals would come together if there was a lot of food, particularly at rubbish dumps, and they were scavengers. They cleaned up, including the bodies on the battlefields that we're told of in Psalm 83. They communicate with howls, barks, growls, whines, cackles, yelps. Jackals are unloved. There are plenty of people on the margins who make us fearful and afraid, that are difficult to love, like jackals, and others we despise, like ostriches. But instead of remembrance, there is hope. And that hope in 2019 continues as God makes a way through the wilderness in the power of the Holy Spirit. To walk on that way will need God's Spirit. And as the wilderness is transformed, it touches, it includes, and it blesses those on the margins. Instead of remembrance, there is hope to be refreshed and renewed by God's Spirit as he makes a way in the wilderness, whatever the dry and difficult challenges that lie ahead. So as part of our response, we're going to sing